The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Yesterday, more than 100,000 people marched on the Capitol, demanding equality for America's gay citizens. The night before, Saturday night, President Obama appeared before a gay lobbying group, the Human Rights Campaign, and spoke about the need for a number of things to help gay Americans. What specifically? Well, he talked about hate crimes legislation, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, that people shouldn't be fired just for being gay. He talked about repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, which discriminates against gay people who can get married in 6 states and soon to come up in the District of Columbia. And he specifically talked about repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the law that says that you can't serve in the military if you're gay. But when will these happen? A lot of people who support rights for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Americans are saying, President Obama, you promised this us in the campaign. Are you just giving us another campaign speech? Will this happen? Well, President Obama made clear he had a lot on his plate. Is the time now? Has he gone too slow? Should we have other issues to worry about? Healthcare, the economy, should those go first? When is the proper time to worry about these rights, to worry about civil rights for gay people? To help answer these questions, I've invited two GLBT activists, both of whom, along with myself, were at the march yesterday. You'll hear all our different perspectives on it, and specifically on the question on whether the Democrats and President Obama are going too slow, whether our time is now, or a few months from now, or a few years from now. And I also hope that you'll call in and help answer that question as well, whether you're for GLBT civil rights or whether you're against equality for America's gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender citizens. You can call in just by dialing in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let me introduce my guest. Sitting to my left is Alex Dixon. She is a GLBT activist. She's also a member of the Standing on the Side of Love campaign with the Unitarian Universalist Church, which is specifically a campaign against hate crimes. Sitting to her left is Brian Scrafford. He is a blogger, another GLBT activist, and an organizer with the Americans for Democratic Action. I should note both of them are attending in their individual capacities rather than on behalf of their organizations. So, Alex, first let's talk about the march. You were at the march yesterday. What'd you think?
Well, I thought it was really cool to be there and to see all of my friends and to see how much momentum we have. So many people were there from California and from Florida and had been on a bus for 12 hours.
I saw people from Alaska. That's quite a drive.
Yeah.
I assume they flew.
That was really, really cool. And I was on 8th Street and there was this one moment when they said, look up. And you looked up and there was a rainbow.
That's right.
And it was just the best feeling in the world, because it was like the universe is on our side and with us.
Actually, I have a picture, which I need to post to my website, of the rainbow flag surrounded by the actual rainbow. It's a nice... But okay, so the visuals were good. Yeah. The people were there. How about the message? What did you think of the people? David Mixner argued very strongly that President Obama and the Democrats weren't doing enough. What do you think?
I can see where people would say that, and I think that we're doing the best that we can with what we've been given. I think that GLBT rights are, of course, very important, and I'm glad I'm not president to have to figure out what, you know...
What order goes
what,
which.
Yeah, yeah, what to focus on, because it's all important. I watched his speech. He's been in office 9 months, and for what he's done in 9 months, I'm really impressed, and it doesn't mean that we should stop. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't push him on it, of course.
Well, we're going to get to the specifics of President Obama's speech in just a second. Brian, I do want to get your take on the march. What do you think of both the visuals and the message?
A hard message that I took away, and I think most people wanted the march to accomplish, was the fact that this is just one small step in the overall battle for equality. And what was really great was You were surrounded, but I've heard estimates upwards of 250,000 people were there. And that's whenever you're in that large of a group, that's empowering no matter what you're standing up for. And I think what I took away and what most grassroots activists took away was while we're doing the hard grunt work of making phone calls, writing letters, telling people why you should stand up for equality, that's hard work and it's not always fun. But when you're out there and you're surrounded by the thousands upon thousands of people, you get energized and you're ready to go home. And that's what I took away, was this was about energizing people, showing them why we need equality, and this getting energized to do the grunt work that's necessary for that the battle.
You know, there's always going to be an argument over numbers. There is with every single March on Washington, yeah. Since the Great March on Washington during the Civil Rights era. I think actually the estimate I saw, I think it was in the Post, about 150,000. It's more accurate than 250,000. Yeah. And the reason I say that is I was in the march in 2000, and there were more people there in the march of 2000. We filled up basically the whole area in front of the Capitol, but it and maybe a couple squares beyond, but it didn't go all the way to the Washington Monument. So we can argue about numbers. I want to ask a question specifically about Congressman Barney Frank, who famously said, and he's my ex-boss, but that doesn't mean you can't criticize him. He famously said, the only thing the activists are putting pressure on is the grass. And his point was that here came everybody that came on a weekend, and they didn't come when Congress is in session, so they weren't lobbying, they weren't calling their members of Congress, they weren't calling their senators, they weren't sending emails, they were putting pressure on the grass, but they weren't putting pressure on the members of Congress who could actually stand in the way. I want to take a quick break. I want you to think about that question. I want to take a break. I also want to give our listeners a chance to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What are your views on this issue? Let me know. We'll be right back after this.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about specifically the Gay Rights March yesterday, President Obama's speech the night before, and whether the Democrats, whether President Obama, have gone too slowly. Well, if we can, I'd like to play what President Obama himself had to say on this point in his speech before the Human Rights Campaign.
For even as we face extraordinary challenges as a nation, we cannot and we will not put aside issues of basic equality. I greatly appreciate the support I've received from many in this room. I also appreciate that many of you don't believe progress has come fast enough. I want to be honest about that, because it's important to be honest among friends. Now, I've said this before, I'll repeat it again. It's not for me to tell you to be patient any more than it was for others to counsel patience to African Americans petitioning for equal rights half a century ago. But I will say this, we have made progress, and we will make more. And I think it's important to remember that there is not a single issue that my administration deals with on a daily basis that does not touch on the lives of the LGBT community. We all have a stake in reviving this economy. We all have a stake in putting people back to work. We all have a stake in improving our schools and achieving quality, affordable health care. We all have a stake in meeting the difficult challenges we face in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay, so Brian, you heard the president. He says, it's not for me to tell you to be patient anymore, as was it for people to tell the civil rights activists of the great civil rights era in the 1960s to be patient. But, you know, I mean, we got jobs, we got education, we've got health care, we've got a very full plate here, Afghanistan, Iraq. What do you think of the president's speech?
Well, let's start with Afghanistan and Iraq. We have we're currently in two wars, and we're in a fighting wars where it's extremely important to have Arab linguists. But because we have Don't Ask, Don't Tell in, and since we've gone over at least 60 GLBT members of the military have been dismissed because they came out, and so we lost Arab linguists.
Right, here we are, we're trying to fight a war, and the people who can best fight the war we're removing because we're putting prejudice ahead of national security.
Right, so essentially, he's talking a good game, and he's right. there are other issues on the table, but if we address GLBT rights, we'll be able to improve the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan by having the proper people over there. If you get down to the economy, there are people that are getting fired because of their sexual orientation. You pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, there you go, you're saving people's jobs, you're helping the economy. And so if you just address GLBT rights, you're actually helping everything else that he claims are preventing us from going right after GLBT rights.
Alex, what's your view?
I see it kind of the same, actually. You know, I think that good things have happened so far. I am proud of where we are in terms of non-discrimination, in terms of the hate crimes bill being passed. He said in the speech that Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation has been introduced. And Washington, in the years that I've been here, it's a slow city. It's methodical. It takes time. And it's not that we need to have patience and that we don't need to advocate, but we need to have patience and not give up hope that these things are going to happen one day.
Well, let's go through each of these, because there's basically four major bills. There are more. There's certainly more things that gay people would like to see. For example, immigration rights isn't even on the plate. Mm-hmm. It's not even discussed. It wasn't even promised by President Obama. But there's four main bills, and I want to talk about each one of them. Mm-hmm. One is hate crimes legislation, the idea that if a person is specifically focused on because they're gay or lesbian or, frankly, because of race or religion, there are other things mm-hmm. in this hate crimes bill. If a person like Matthew Shepard is beaten up or crucified because he's gay, or even if a cross is burned on someone's lawn because they're African American, the idea is that we punish these crimes. Now, this bill, I should say, is the most forward bill. It's the easiest to get and the one that's most likely to get. The House has already passed the bill. The Senate has put it on a must-pass defense authorization. It's fully expected that that bill will become law a month from now. And I think President Obama gets some credit for that, but I also think it's worthwhile pointing out this has been the works for years and years and years, and this is something that we thought was going to happen. Even under George Bush was willing to sign this legislation. So maybe it's not as quite as advanced as we think it is. All right, the next in line, everyone says, is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. This is the law that says you can't be fired because you're gay. It's a law that has 80 or 90% Americans approve. Even fundamentalists, many of them, don't think you should be fired because you're gay, even if they don't approve of people being gay. After all, they may not approve of people being divorced or people who've committed adultery, but even some of their representatives in Congress have done that, so they don't think they should be fired for doing that. This is a bill that back in 1996 was paired with the Defense of Marriage Act under Bill Clinton, and everyone thought it would pass, and it lost by one vote. Al Gore was ready to break the tie. That's largely considered the next step. The third step is Don't Ask, Don't Tell, getting rid of what you mentioned, Brian, discrimination against gay people in the military. I want to talk about that at length. That's the one that I think people are looking for President Obama to do, because it's something that he's promised to do several times in the campaign, repeatedly. He promised to do it before the Human Rights Campaign that very night, but he won't give a time frame. He won't say when. And the last and probably the most important, but maybe the most difficult, is getting rid of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, the kind of thing that says that even though Massachusetts has said that gay couples can marry, they still don't get federal rights, rights like Social Security benefits and other things, federal tax, income tax returns, that even when a state decides that they're going to do it, they're still not doing it. So I guess my question is, first of all, who's in the way? President Obama says, I'm ready to sign these things. And I have no doubt that if Congress presented these bills to him, framed on a desk, that he would sign them. So perhaps, on the one hand, it's Congress that's in the way. They haven't passed a bill, but perhaps President Obama needs to use his bully pulpit to push Congress.
Well, also, yes, he says that, and when he's given a speech to HRC, he says he's for that. And then what we've heard a lot is that he's waiting on Congress. Well, Harry Reid, about 2 weeks ago,
the majority of the Senate,
he sent a letter to the President and to Secretary of Defense Gates, essentially saying, hey, we want your position on this so that we can move forward on legislation. And so essentially that is telling me that there's a movement in Congress. Congress is ready to move forward on this legislation, but they're waiting on kind of the bully pulpit of the White House to step forward and say, we need to move this.
And that President Obama needs to twist some arms.
Right. So basically, he talks a good talk when he's in front of the gay groups, but we haven't heard the behind-the-scenes rhetoric that we really need. And I think what's truly telling about this is less than 24 hours after he spoke to HRC, we heard a report from on CNBC, or it could have been regular NBC.
It was regular NBC. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yes, where a White House source told a reporter that the people who thought Obama was moving too slow essentially were the internet fringe, and that he was saying that they need to get out of their pajamas, grow up, and realize that the legislation process is slow.
And that internet fringe, I assume, would include the 150,000 people who came from all across the country to march yesterday.
Right. That's what they were in the midst of that conversation. That's like they included the bloggers, the marchers, everyone that had been talking about how we need change.
Well, let me ask Alex. I mean, Brian's talking pretty tough against the president. He's saying that he's all words and no action. You heard President Obama say himself, you know, I can't tell you to be patient, just like I couldn't tell people in 1960 to be patient. How about this criticism of President Obama? Is it fair?
I think it is, and I also think that he's doing the best that he can. I think that, she said situation where the president's saying, well, Congress isn't moving forward, and Congress is saying the president isn't moving forward, and somewhere in between the two is the truth. I think that we need some stronger leadership out of Congress, and I think that we need to have Obama be stronger, too.
I mean, it's interesting. President Obama says very clearly, you know, I got a lot of other issues. I've got education, I've got health care, I've got all these other issues. It made me think back to the 1960s. There was another big issue. It was called Vietnam, and it was an issue where Americans were dying in massive numbers. 50,000 people died in Vietnam. People were marching in the streets, and yet those in support of civil rights, which I'm proud to say include some members of my own family, who were very opposed to Vietnam, didn't also stop marching on behalf of civil rights. They could do two things at one time. President Obama very famously said when John McCain said, oh, we have to cut off our debates and fly back to Washington to fix the financial crisis, he said, I can do two things at one time. Can he do all these things? This is more than two, right? But can he do health care and cap and trade and also promote equality for all? Can he do it all at the same time? Alex, you first.
Well, yes, I think that he can. He's working on the economy. He's working on health care.
All
true. Working on Afghanistan, Guantanamo. He's working on Iraq. And he's also working on this. And so, yeah, I think he can. I think we're going to see movement towards the GLBT equality.
When? Are we going to see it before the November 2010 midterms? What's your prediction?
He's a politician. Of course he's not going to tell you.
What do you think, Alex?
I
don't mind putting you on the spot.
I would like to see it sooner rather than later, but my gut feeling is that it will be towards the end of his first term.
So it won't be before the midterm elections in 2010. If not, Brian, you know, many people are saying with the unemployment rate hitting 10%, whenever it hits that, the party in power loses. We could lose some seats in Congress in both the Senate and the House. Well, if President Obama waits till 2011, will the agenda be more difficult to pass?
Well, that could be true, but what I think we have to look at is even if we don't lose control of the House, you're not going to
lose seats and not lose control.
Right. If you're not going to do it this year or in the beginning of 2010, people will say we're not going to do it in later half of 2010 because that's election year. Well, the way things are going in the presidential campaigns nowadays, 2011 is the beginning of the presidential campaign. 2012 is when the Senate and the House and the presidency are up. So then you have to wait until 2013. And that's assuming we still have the White House.
And the Senate and the House and 60 seats in the Senate.
So basically, if we don't move now, we might be able to move later, but I don't think it's going to happen. We have to stand up for human rights now. If we stand up for basic human civil rights now, you know what? We're probably not going to lose control of the House and the Senate. We might lose a few seats because that always happens when things change hand. But the momentum will build, and if we get out and people really stand up for this, we'll be able to get the change. So I think the process has to start. The legislative process has to start. Because I think another important part is we're talking about losing control and how that might not be good. Well, if you're ignoring the basic concerns of the GLBT community, which is a huge part of the Democratic base, you're not going to get as many people that want to go out and knock on the doors, and that's going to cause more harm. So it's actually, if you're talking about...
I was just going to get to that. I mean, it's famously said that justice delayed is justice denied, but I can tell you this. There are not many gay people who will give a penny to the Democratic Party if they don't come through by November 2010 midterm. And I'm not saying this as a threat. I'm saying it as a promise. I can tell you that, I'll just say for myself, I'm not inclined to give to the... Last year I gave to the DCCC, I gave to the DSCC, the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. We have 60 seats in the Senate. We have a large number majority in the House. This may be a high watermark for Democrats, and I can tell you this, if they want more seats in 2010, they need people who support gay civil rights to vote and to get out and support them. I'm definitely going to vote for the Democrats. But will I give money? Will I knock on doors? If the party doesn't deliver basic equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender Americans, I mean, they're not asking for much. They're asking, don't be beaten up. Let us serve our country and die for our country if we want to. Let us have a job and get married. I mean, I don't know that getting a job, being married, serving in the military, and not getting beaten up are specifically special values. These right. seem to be very much American values. And I would say, if not now, when? I'm going to say, and I'll get both your views on it, that if President Obama doesn't get this accomplished by March or April of 2010, the Democrats are going to be hurting. His party is going to be hurting. Even if it's not President Obama, all right, he'll be in office. The Democrats in Congress who are standing in the way, they're going to lose a lot of support, specifically Virginia. Okay, Senator Warner, Senator Webb, if they're not on board, they're going to see a lot of their support dry up. You're going to see that in congressional races. You're going to see that all across the country, and they'll find that people don't like being taken advantage of. What's your view, Alex?
Well, I think one of the important things that we need to do as voters is to show these congressmen that they're not going to lose their jobs voting for GLBT rights. We, during the Marshall Newman Amendment, had...
Explain to our listeners what that is, because not all of them know.
Okay, during...
What is the Marshall Newman Amendment?
It's the amendment to the Virginia Constitution outlawing gay marriage.
Okay. But it went further than that.
Right.
It outlawed really any gay relationship of any kind.
Right.
Right. It's a very harsh amendment. Yeah.
During that time period, we actually did have candidates in Southern Virginia, which is not known as good Democratic territory, to come out and say the Marshall Newman Amendment's wrong. And they actually got voted into office. And so it's one of those things, I think, that at the state level and also at the federal level, there's that fear that if we vote for equality, you know, the conservative base of the Republican Party or the evangelicals or the people who are anti-GLBT, because I don't want to paint everyone who's the Republican Party or everyone who's an evangelical is anti-GLBT, will not vote for us, and then we'll lose our power and our seats and our job and that sort of thing. So we've got to show that people don't lose their seats for voting for equality.
I think the best way to show that is through public opinion polls. If you look at the hate crimes legislation, overwhelming numbers of Americans support it. If you look at the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, somewhere upwards of 80% of Americans support that. If you look for getting rid of the policy that discriminates against gays and lesbians serving in the military, the vast majority of Americans support that. If you look at repealing DOMA, all right, that's one we still got some work to do on. But 3 out of 4 items on the agenda have the support of the American people. And it's my view, and I'll get to your comments after the break, Brian, it's my view that if President Obama and the Democrats don't get 3 out of those 4, hate crimes, ENDA, and repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they're going to have problems in the midterm. What do you think? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. Yesterday was the 4th, I believe, Gay Rights March on Washington. There was them in 87, 93, 2000, and yesterday. And it was mostly attended by a lot of young people. In fact, one article about it wrote that it was the new generation that was taking over. The 20-somethings were putting their voice in it. And I've got 2 20-somethings to my left, the voice of the new generation of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender activists, people who believe very much in equal rights for all Americans. And yet there's a big fight. There's a big disagreement within the those who support equal rights for gay, lesbian, bisexual Americans over whether or not the march did any good. As I said before the break, Congressman Barney Frank, the most senior gay member of Congress, said that the only thing they'll be putting pressure on is the grass. Barney was roundly booed at the march for that statement, and yet I think he had a point. Not that they shouldn't have the march, I don't agree with him on that, but that if people went all the way from California and Ohio and Florida to march on Washington and then went home, frankly, they did less than someone who did nothing but picked up the phone, dialed 202-225-3121, which is the Capitol switchboard. You can look it up if you don't remember that number, and said to their senators and their elected representative, I want your support of these four bills, the four that I mentioned, hate crimes and repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, repeal of DOMA. The person who made a phone call and spent 5 minutes on the phone did more work than the marchers who trampled on the grass. That I agree with Barney on, but I don't agree with him that the march was improper. Alex, what are your views on both Barney Frank's comment and what really matters for pursuing equality?
I'm of two opinions with Barney Frank's comments. I think maybe that he was trying to get people actually to come out, just to get us riled up and angry and, you know, that kind of, you know, to say, oh, it's just a small little thing, you know, no one's going to come out. And, well, I'm going to come out because, you know, now you've ticked me off.
Oh, okay, so it's reverse psychology. He knew how to make, he knew that the best way to get young people to do something is tell them you're not going to do this.
Right, huh? Right.
Well, so, you know, Barney's clever, and maybe that was his plan.
Maybe there's a little bit of that going on.
Yeah.
And I'll agree with you that a march in and of itself, and like Brian said, it does increase visibility and it does increase momentum and that sort of thing. But yes, you do have to go home. You do have to get registered to vote. As a young person, you get told to. I found something very interesting yesterday. There was a speaker, and I don't remember his name, who said that the young people are going to be the face of this movement and are going to be the impetus behind this movement. But then young people also get told that we don't vote and that politicians don't listen to us because we don't vote. So we as young people have to get registered to vote, have to, you know, go and visit our senators, visit our legislators, go and write letters, that sort of thing.
Definitely. You know, you don't even have to visit. Really, a simple email, a simple phone call, a simple letter. I mean, a visit's better, but frankly, if you live elsewhere, and people watch the Inside Scoop from all across the country, if you live in Oregon and you can't afford to travel out here, a letter, a phone call would make the difference. Brian, what are your thoughts on both Barney Frank's comment and whether the march achieved anything?
Now, here's what I think is very interesting. Barney Frank went on Michelangelo Signorelli's show, essentially said, stay home, do stuff in your district, that's all we need. So basically, he was saying he's going to be at home that weekend, so he should.
He was raising money in California.
Yeah, he's out in California raising money.
That's right.
So basically,
for the Democrats.
Yes, but why can't he just make a phone call or go and write a letter? Because it's more effective to go to where the action is and take on the issue. And even if you're not going to be there for an extended long time and have a huge impact, he didn't change California while he was there. Prop 8
yeah, but
still
Brian, what did the march do? I mean, a bunch of people trampled on the grass. Congress was not in session. There wasn't a single member of Congress that spoke at the march. They come in while Congress is in recess, and they leave before Congress comes back. No one in Congress even saw the march.
Yes, but guess what? We had nonstop coverage on the news. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get that if you write a letter. They don't.
C-SPAN won't cover it,
yeah.
CNN won't cover it.
So they covered it. I mean, we just used a clip from Obama's speech to HRC.
The Human Rights Campaign.
Right. Obama more than likely would not have come if this talked to the group if the march wasn't happening. And even if he did come, I guarantee you, if we didn't have that march on Sunday, you wouldn't have seen more than a two-second blurb saying Obama reached out to the gays.
So let me suggest to you that it's not either or, that it's not to march or not to march, but that both the marchers and Barney Frank are right. The marchers are right that it brings visibility, it brings press coverage, it gets the president to repeat his promises, at least, to the Human Rights Campaign. But if people don't contact members of Congress, and I think this is Barney Frank's point, then they've just put pressure on the grass.
Right.
You agree with that, Congress?
Yes, but here's where I don't think Barney Frank fully understood what was going on. Saturday, people got into town on Saturday, and they weren't just going out to the bars and dancing and have a good time. all afternoon. There's a training session for people where they could learn how to organize phone banks. They could learn how to organize letter to the editor campaigns. They were learning how to do that grassroots action that Barney Frank was talking about.
Yeah, but how many marchers participated in that? 1,000, 2,000 out of 150,000?
Yes, but that's 1,000 or 2,000 that you would not have had if you didn't have this march. But more importantly, what I'm trying to say is that this march was just one step in the entire picture. Cleve Jones, one of the organizers for this, wanted at least one person from all 435 congressional districts to come out, participate in the training, let their voice be heard, and it's all part of the long
moving.
Did they
get that? Did they get someone from every one of the 435?
I don't know, and you'd have to ask Cleve on that, but I know there are people from all over. I think you mentioned earlier you saw some people from Alaska.
I did see the people from Alaska. I was very impressed with that they had come. Alex, you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I mean, you're right in that proportionally it is a small group that goes and does the training, but I think about it in circles, in terms of we're at the core of a circle, you know, we're a one or a two, and then we can talk to each other and train each other, and then the twos can talk to the threes who, you know, might be friendly, might not want to do anything about it, but, you know, that sort of thing. And then the threes can talk to the fours who are a little bit even more separated from what's going on, and the fours can talk to the fives.
Well let me suggest this, and I'm not just defending Barney Frank because I used to work for him. I think he had a point. Now, Barney can be gruff about making his points. I happen to know that from personal experience. Mm-hmm. But I think his point, as someone who's worked in Congress, is valid. Congress doesn't hear you when you scream on the mall. Congress doesn't hear you. Now, CNN shows some pictures, and you're one dot among many, and it does help to have 150,000 rather than 20,000. Frankly, if only 20,000 had shown up, we'd be in worse shape now. But Congress does hear you when you write them. Congress does hear you when you call them. Congress does hear you when you email them. And Barney pointed to the two most effective lobbies in the country. And he said that the National Rifle Association and AARP, the American Association for Retired Persons. And I have to agree with Barney that those are the two most effective lobbies in the United States. And I usually support the AARP agenda, and I'm against the NRA agenda. But both of them are very, very good at getting literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, to send in those little form letters they write, to click on a button, to send in a letter, to mail back a postcard, so that members of Congress know they're out there. And I guess one thing I would agree with Barney on is I don't see people who advocate for gay, lesbian equality sending or working or getting those postcards out there nearly as effectively as either the conservative NRA or the liberal AARP. And Brian, you're a blogger. I know you're out getting people to help. Maybe you disagree. You take some umbrage with that?
I've noticed, especially when I'm talking to staffers and members of Congress.
And I know you do it. I'm talking about
right.
the larger community. You do a good job, Brian.
Thank you.
I've seen your work.
But what I think is noticeable is that when you have these massive groups that send out have everyone write in letters at the same time, the staffers know, okay, AARP just now had their members write in. What you need is a group that is able to inspire people to write their individual stories in so you don't get form letters sent.
Well, let me answer it as a former staffer, okay? Because I used to see all these letters. I was someone who opened the envelopes. Well, I didn't open the envelopes, but I saw the... yeah, someone else do that. But I happened to see all the form letters that came in, and I saw the individual letters. And I will agree with you that an individual letter has a little more power, a little more punch than a form letter. But the form letters have power, and I don't want to in any way. I mean, I would say to my boss, I would say, okay, you've got 233 letters against and 693 letters for. I mean, they count, and they count. Obviously, people don't read every single form letter, but you are counted. And if a lot of people don't have time to write an individual letter, let me say to you that if all you have time to do is check a box on the computer sending your form letter, do that. That is far better than nothing. I mean, I would say a phone call is the best. An individual letter is probably the second best, but today, because of the anthrax, you have to screen them. They won't get those letters for usually 2-3 weeks. You have to fax them. An individual email is next best. But even if it's just a form email, I guarantee you they hear it. And if you have an issue that a member of Congress doesn't care much about, you know, Barney Frank is never going to change his view on gay rights, and neither is Joe Wilson going to change his view against gay rights or for the Confederate veterans or whatever he believes in. You're always, I guarantee you, they're not going to change their views. But there are people in the middle. There's a large number of moderate Democrats, Blue Dog Democrats. They're mostly focused on fiscal issues. They don't talk much about gay civil equality. They can really take it or leave it. If people write these people, you really can change their views. The same way if you have a liberal member of Congress who might vote either way on farm subsidies, or a conservative member of Congress who might vote either way on a certain arms in Afghanistan. The point is that there are members with strong views, but not every member has a strong view on gay equal rights, and they can be pushed, and people's letters can push them.
One of the things I keep hearing in doing this work is, but I'm just one person, you know. And when you talk about those numbers, 300 and 600, people will come back and say, well, I'm one of 600, you know, what can I do? But I keep telling people, you know, yeah, you're one of 600, but you have five friends.
That's true. But also, when you vote, you're one of 600,000. So, you know, frankly, when you write your member of Congress, you have 1,000 times more power than when you vote, sometimes more. It's amazing because people do go out and vote, and they should, when their votes really are a small weight. When you write your member of Congress, you have increased your weight 1,000 times, and you're absolutely right. You have friends, you have family. Brian, I know you're very effective with email campaigns yourself. Do you send out notices asking people to write the members of Congress on these four bills we've talked about?
Yes, and I mean, one of the big things that I do is big part of my job is to use the Netroots, Facebook, email, blogs. And what I've always been doing is when I send out an email to an email list, I put it on the blogs, I put it on the on Facebook, Twitter, all over. And I think that's kind of the big thing, is that we need groups that can kind of use all the resources available, not just the march, but send out your personal story about the march, why you did it, why you need people to help you follow up. And that's where groups like HRC should come in handy in helping get that together, but I'm sure we can talk about some of the situations going on with HRC.
Well, we'll get to the Human Rights Campaign. There's controversy there, too. I also want to encourage you to call and join in this discussion, whatever your views on gay civil equality. If you're against it, I want to hear from you, too. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
And I'm here with a simple message. I'm here with you in that fight.
That's, of course, President Obama saying he's here with the gay, lesbian community and activists in support of their equality in that fight. But a lot of people think he hasn't gone far enough. A number of gay activists gave it an F, I saw. In the newspaper. They don't think he's gone far enough, and there's a few things they complain about. One is this legislation. He gave no time frame. It looks like hate crimes may pass, but what about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? When's that going to happen? What about repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? When's that going to happen? What about the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act? When's that going to happen? And the other thing people are complaining about is specifically things this administration has done. They have written letters. Their Justice Department has defended the Defense of Marriage Act. President Obama has not cut off funds to enforce that, even though most constitutional scholars, including myself, think the whole thing is unconstitutional to begin with. Should the administration itself be doing more? Should people be protesting when President Obama says, I'm here with you? What do you think, Alex?
I think that the letters from the Justice Department in defense of DOMA are unconscionable. I think that has been the biggest letdown of this administration in terms of GLBT rights. But I still think that we've got a long road ahead of us still. The arc of the universe is long, and it bends towards love and justice, as is said.
Right, and people said that to African Americans a long time. Just wait, we're getting you there. We're getting those rights.
Not like that. I don't mean it like that. I mean it like, don't give up, because I don't think
people are ever going to give up. I want to know if it's fair to say that President Obama, as some have said, is he's all talk. He's all talk and no action.
I don't think he's all talk and no action. I think that there has been action, like I said, with the hate crimes legislation. There's been action on that. There's going to be action on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But it is a matter of keeping the pressure up and not getting discouraged that it doesn't happen today or tomorrow or, you know, in 3 months. It's one of those things, you got to be in this for the long haul. And who knows how long that long haul is going to be. I hope that tomorrow we all wake up and this is a just and equal world. But
Brian looks like he's about ready to explode over here. What are your thoughts?
Now, Obama even said it in his speech. You cannot, if we were dealing with African-American civil rights, it would be unacceptable for him to simply say, wait your turn. That, we're dealing with very similar issues here. These are basic civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage, yes, there's some controversy.
There is some resistance on marriage.
But
the other three, there's strong poll support
right,
for.
And it's not like we're going to, like, take over. It's not like the gays are trying to take over the country. I mean, all we're asking for is for people to be able to show up at the workplace and do their job. If they're qualified, do their job. And we're not allowed to because people are just too afraid to actually take on a controversial issue.
You know, the military policy is one that particularly tears at my heart, partly because I used to work with the Service Members Legal Defense Fund to help people. And there's a very powerful article, I don't know if you two have read it, but I would encourage our listeners to, in the Outlook section of last Sunday's Washington Post, where they describe how a service member, a hardworking man who's willing to risk his life for his country, let's not forget who these service members are, who was literally, physically abused because it's interesting. He never said he was gay. Don't ask, don't tell. He never said he was gay. But he wouldn't talk badly about women. And they assume that if you don't like pornography and you don't say these nasty things about women, that you must be gay. And basically, if he didn't do these abusive things they wanted him to do, they were going to out him. For women, it's worse. I can tell you from personal experience talking with service members, there are women, and it's awful to say this, but people need to know it happens. There are women who are raped. And they are raped and told, if you complain about the sexual abuse, we're going to out you as a lesbian. And some of these women are straight. But the point is that because there's this witch hunt, because there's this policy, men and women, young men and women who are willing to lay down their lives for their country are physically abused, not to mention emotional and mental abuse. And who gets away with it? The bigots are protected. As the Washington Post pointed out in the case of the person that mistreated the man whose the story was focused on, I don't remember his name right now, the presiding officer, the one in charge, was promoted. The number two, the woman who was trying to protect him, she found out she couldn't help him and she committed suicide. I mean, these are awful things. When we want our service members to focus on confronting Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and Pakistan, they have to worry about being abused by their superiors. So this goes far beyond simply civil equality for gay people. It goes to really basic human rights as Americans. I don't know if either of you read that article.
Yeah, well, they actually did a piece on that today on CNN. So I haven't read the article, but I saw the piece. And I think one point that you made there is extremely important, that while they're overseas and they're supposed to be fighting for our national security, they have to worry about their own sexuality being exposed. That means they're not doing the best they can in defending our country.
No, they have to look over their shoulders right. All the time and worry that someone might see a letter they wrote home
right.
To their loved one, perhaps, or an email they sent home. I have to tell you, as someone who's worked with these people in a congressional office, some of the times people got in trouble is, you know, you have a man who's had a partner, a husband, really, although it's not legal, for many years, and he writes home to the love of his life to tell how things are, and he might forget to change the name, to lie about it, and then someone finds out because someone looked over his shoulder, he has to watch who's reading his email. One email, don't ask, don't tell. People don't understand, it really isn't don't ask, don't tell. If somebody spies on you, and read your email when they're not allowed to. And I got to tell you, most of these emails, they're not protected because they come from a military zone and they have to be monitored to prevent terrorism and things like that. If they find out that you're writing your loved one saying, you know, I'm okay, I'm safe, I haven't died, that's the kind of thing that can be used to trump someone and throw them out of the military.
Right. So essentially, what while a lot of the right-wing people might say, oh, you don't need your rights, or there's people in the Democratic Party saying, oh, we can wait on this, if you're concerned at all about our national security, we need this done. So this basically, now we're getting to something big, is this is not just civil rights. This is about protecting America at the same time. So Republicans like to claim they're the ones that are all patriotic. Well, do your patriotic duty and support civil rights and our national security at the same time.
I don't know too many people who would say, yeah, I'd rather America be attacked on September 11th than have an Arabic translator find out what happened just because that person's gay. But Alex, you were telling me in the break, a lot of people who want to advocate on behalf of gay and lesbian civil rights are afraid to do so. They're afraid to call a member of Congress. Straight allies are afraid because someone might think they're gay. There's actually fear even of lobbying. Tell me about that.
You go to Lobby Day in Virginia, in Richmond, and you are lucky to get, you know, five people from your district, and I'm in Northern Virginia, and there's got to be more. But it's, you know, I'm not out to my employer, and what if my employer finds out? I'm not out to my family. I'm not out to my friends. As a straight ally, it can sometimes be a challenge to push against those barriers of what will people think. And
you know, one of the great lessons that the feminist movement taught us in the 1970s is that the personal is political. Mm-hmm. So if you are gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, if you come out and say you are, and I am gay and I have come out before, it's mm-hmm. not usually the focus on my show, but I should practice what I preach, so I am out. But if you come out, it becomes a political statement and people realize that, you know, people in all walks of life are out. But I think it's important to recognize that obviously you don't have to be gay mm-hmm. to support gay equality. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not African American, but my aunt went down and registered blacks in Mississippi in the 1960s, mm-hmm. As did many Americans of every religion and hue mm-hmm. and color. And I'm proud to say I have actually a first cousin who started a Gay Straight Alliance Club in her high school. She's straight, but she felt it was important to do so. Mm-hmm. So I just want to emphasize that supporting civil rights for all, supporting human rights for all, not only do you not have to be gay, but frankly, I think it's something that all Americans should support, no matter what their sexual orientation, just as I will go out there and march for African Americans, mm-hmm. I will march for religious freedom, mm-hmm. I will march for, and have marched for all those things. Mm-hmm. Certainly people marching for gay and lesbian rights can do the same.
Right, and it's just a matter of, I was at the Equality Virginia conference, state conference 2 weeks ago, and they said something really interesting. They said, why are people anti-GLBT rights? And they tend to be anti-GLBT rights because of religion and because they don't know anyone. And so coming out is really important because, A, then, oh, hey, I know Mark, he's a good guy. You know, of course he deserves right. And that by knowing someone who's GLBT, that actually begins to trump religion.
And let me ask you about religion, because you are a member of a group of your church, Unitarian Universalist Church, right, that's very supportive of gay and lesbian rights. People forget how many churches and synagogues and mosques that there are, many, many religious people who are supportive of civil rights for all. There are many religious groups, churches, and synagogues that actually marry gay people, lesbian couples, within the church. What has the Unitarian Universalist Church done in this regard?
Well, we do civil commitment ceremonies, and I need to be specific here and say that not all Unitarian Universalist churches do this. It is actually a choice. We are self-governing, so you have what are called welcoming congregations, and the members of that congregation vote on whether or not to become a welcoming congregation. And then once you are, you have to go through a training process just to kind of raise your awareness about GLBT issues. And then, I mean, you had the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association come down yesterday and march with us.
And in fact, spoke at the rally. One thing I wanted to point out, and I've been very active in helping the District of Columbia mm-hmm. have marriage equality for all. I've helped work on that legislation, mm-hmm. and indeed I went to court to stop the initiative. Mm-hmm. But one of the things in that bill passed by David Catania, it's very, very clear about religious freedom. And I think people have to make very clear the separation between church and state. Mm-hmm. All any gay activists, even the most radical ones, want is equal rights under the law. What that means is, and specifically with the DC marriage law, mm-hmm. is that if a church wants to marry only straight people, if a church wants to marry only Christians, if a church wants to marry only Catholics or fundamentalist Christians, if an Orthodox synagogue wants to marry only Jews, that's fine. No one restricts the right of a church or synagogue to marry whom they wish. All the gay people want the right to do, lesbian couples want the right to do, is go to a judge, go to a civil authority, and get married. Religious practice are perfectly free, and I do want to give credit to David Catania, the council in D.C., for making sure that is clear in his legislation. By the way, there's going to be a hearing on that on October 26th. I hope you'll attend that. Our time is up. I want to thank very much Brian Spafford and Alex Dixon for coming here on The Inside Scoop. If you want to know more information, check it out on the website, radioinsidescoop.com. This is Mark Levine.